Can cloud computing giants kick out customers for what is seen as dangerous speech? I'm David Brancaccio. In the wake of the insurrection in the Capitol, the social network Parler is suing Amazon. It wants a federal judge to stop Amazon from banishing it from the Amazon cloud computers where Parler is stored and distributed. Marketplace's Nova Safo has details.
Yeah, Parler is popular with Trump supporters. It's been criticized for not doing more to get rid of posts that encourage or incite violence on its platform. And that's the reason Amazon says it booted Parler off its web hosting services, effectively shutting it down. Now in its lawsuit, Parler is accusing Amazon of making a politically motivated decision of violating antitrust law. And it's pointing to Twitter, saying Twitter also has violent posts on its platform, but has not suffered similar consequences. So Parler is claiming a double standard there, David.
Now, there have been lots of questions about whether big online companies are quashing protected speech. Does Parler have a case here?
You know, we put that question to Daphne Keller. She's a cyber law expert at Stanford, and she was skeptical.
Platforms' ability to exclude content they don't want to carry is grounded in the platform's own First Amendment rights to set editorial policy. And platforms have won a lot of cases on that claim. It's hard to identify any kind of legal claim that can get past that.
You know, in fact, Keller says there have been dozens of lawsuits similar to the one Parler filed. None have succeeded so far.
Nova Safo, thank you. With 9 days to go and facing the looming chance of impeachment, President Trump is scheduled to visit the Texas-Mexico border today. He'll highlight the border wall he pushed. Trump's immigration legacy will also include family separation and the detention of nearly 500,000 children at the border. Many of those children, as well as hundreds of thousands of adults, were kept in for-profit detention centers that made good money during Trump's term. As Marketplace's Andy Euler reports, that could soon change.
A study from the Marshall Project found that the portion of company revenue from immigration detention for the private prison company CoreCivic more than doubled between 2014 and 2019. Denise Gilman studies immigration law at the University of Texas at Austin. She says under President Trump,
the private prison industry just changed its focus to the federal government and specifically to immigration detention and began engaging in much heavier lobbying and campaign contributions.
The Biden campaign promised to end for-profit detention centers. And David Fati, director of the American Civil Liberties Union's Prison Project, says things could change quickly once Joe Biden takes office.
The administration could make various policy changes that would simply reduce the number of detained immigrants, thereby reducing demand.
Stock prices for two of the country's largest prison companies, Geo Group and CoreCivic, fell dramatically when it became clear that Biden had won the presidency. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
S&P and NASDAQ futures are each up 0.3%. Now to the business of fine art and how a painting or a print is not a knockoff if the artists themselves make the copies. Today, the Marion Goodman Gallery in New York is opening an exhibition on what are called multiples, a movement that art critic Blake Gopnik says got high-end art into the homes of people who are not rich, families like his. Blake, welcome back to the program.
Pleasure to be back again, David.
Art in multiple. Some have seen this over the years as what, a force for making society better?
Yeah. I mean, I think what happened is in the 1960s, there was a movement to fight what was a really brand new high-end market by making challenging art in larger editions, making it available to anyone who wanted it instead of it being just something for the high-end.
These multiples helped shape you and the whole Gopnik family? You have a stake in this story?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. When I was a kid, I grew up surrounded by art, by mostly pop artists like Roy Lichtenstein or Claes Oldenburg. And I guess I didn't really realize until recently that all of these works that my poor, you know, young academic assistant professor parents bought were produced by this company in New York called Multiples, Inc. And they were the target market for it. The idea was to make all of this brand new art accessible. And my parents bought it hook, line, and sinker. And I don't think I'd be an art critic today if I hadn't grown up surrounded by that art.
And some of the multiples that your folks got was challenging art?
Yeah, I think it's important to realize that the point of multiples was never to provide easy art for every living room. This was about presenting challenging art for anyone who wanted it. Because, of course, before that, high-end art always went for a fortune, or at least for the decade before multiples came along.
I mean, it makes things more accessible, but I guess economics often says that if one is precious, 300 of the same thing would be less valuable. I know, like, printmakers don't see it that way. They tend to do editions.
It's certainly true that something that comes out as a multiple is less valuable on the market, but part of the point of multiples was to push back against the market. And their being cheaper and their being not unique was part of the point. They were supposed to be about mass production. They used the materials of mass production, like plastic. They used actual fabricators, you know, from the world of everyday commodities, like banner makers, to make these objects. So it was really a push back against the whole notion of uniqueness that the high-end market had always been built on.
Art critic Blake Gopnik's New York Times article is entitled "Who Said Art is Only for the 1%? He's also the author of the comprehensive Warhol biography. Blake, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, David. A pleasure.
2021 so far, the year of higher interest rates, the 10-year benchmark now up to 1.17%. I'm David Brancaccio, Marketplace Morning Report, from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.